Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Hannah and Fabs show. No, it's not that all the time. It's Hannah Lies This, featuring Hannah Gelb, your co-host, and Fabs, our wonderful producer. Today, we want to talk about the little tribe of people that live inside your brain and yell at you and boss you around. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're sitting quietly and only one of them is bossing you around. But before we get to that, I have to vent a little bit because there is a person in my life who I care about very deeply, but we also have a history of not seeing eye to eye and conflict. And every time I see this person, they ask me if I'm dating anybody. And it's really hard for me to not. It always comes off as like, literally, this is the only thing that matters. Like, I don't care about the podcast. I don't care about banjo. I don't care about any art you're making or like your job or like your dreams. It's like, I'm not even interested in who you actually are, but I need to know that you're doing this thing because that is how I know that I did the right thing. I mean, that's my, I don't know.
Is it like a pity ask? Or is it like, are you dating anyone and you can see kind of the concern, or is it more like an intrigue? Like, tell me the goss. Are you dating anyone? What kind of ask is it?
It could be both, but I think it's like, wow, that's like pretty sad. Like, I mean, this is someone who also, while watching Bridget Jones once with me, was like, God, can you imagine being 32 and not in a serious relationship?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, it just sucks every time. And actually, a friend of mine was there, and afterwards, I felt so validated because my friend was like, dude, that was really, I could not believe we were having that conversation. And every time this comes up, I spin out and I'm like, you know what?
There's no way
if I said, you know what? I'm just really not, it's not really important to me right now. End of story. I don't think that would go over well. I also don't know what we would talk about. Like, so I'm but I hate, you know, on the drive home, I was just like in this despair of like, wow, my life is meaningless, and how am I going to figure this out? I don't even know if I want kids. What's the point of even having a partner if you don't even want kids? I mean, okay, obviously that's crazy, but like, and then like, what am I like, just, it's so frustrating and it is so painful because it's like so disappointing that this person is like, I really don't even, I'm just really not interested in like knowing you really. I'm interested in you, your life aligning with my life so that I can be reassured that what I'm doing is correct. And you know, some people who are like, well, I'm married. I just kind of know things that you don't know. And also I'm up here and you're down there. And like, if only you could get to here. And I'm like, oh yeah, sounds great. I don't know. Anyways, that is my rant for today. I don't know what to do about it. I'm like, okay, this person is never going to change. I cannot change them. I have to learn to just let it roll off and be like, well, that's how this person lives their life and it makes them happy. Okay, it's not coming from a place you suck. It's coming from a place of legitimate, like, I care about you and this is what I think a life is and you don't have that. So I'm going to be concerned until you have a life that looks like what a life is, you know?
Right. Until your like life looks like my culture. And I wonder if it would be like, what would happen if you were just like, hey, the way you talk about this makes me feel like you don't value other parts of my life. Like, what would she say?
I honestly have no idea. I'm scared.
Man, it's hard. Oh, man. Then it's just driving home. She's probably one of those voices in your head. And probably like that's the hard thing. Probably part of the reason what she says makes you feel this way is because there is a part of you that has like gives weight to that, that already has that one of those people in your head talks.
You're
like
right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. One of the people on the committee. Absolutely. I didn't even think about that when I was bringing the story in. Fabs, you're such a genius.
I have married friends who do that. And then I sometimes will push back on it and sometimes call them out on it. But then, you know, it's tricky too, because obviously this doesn't sound like what's happening here, but sometimes in some of my relationships, I do the thing where it's like, sometimes I'm sad about being single and I want you to have compassion on me. And then sometimes when you have compassion on me and I'm single, I feel like invalidated because don't you think I'm enough by myself? And why are you trying to tell me I'm not good enough? And so it's sort of a hard setup sometimes for my married friends where it's like, or my coupled friends, where they don't know which Fabs they're going to get and like how to interact best. It's like, definitely don't act like it's not hard, because then I get mad about that when it feels hard. And definitely don't act like it's hard, because then I get mad about that because I think you're saying I'm like missing some part of my life that's essential. But it really all comes down to how I'm feeling internally and like what those narratives are internally, you know?
And why do we have this idea that there is one life out there? But then it's so hard to like, it does seem like that's the case. It's not like you meet someone and they're in a relationship and you're like, oh, a relationship? Gosh,
that's not a new way of doing things.
Whoa, I mean, gosh, that's really hard. That's a lot of work and compromise and like emotional labor and like very rewarding if you
can.
I'm
so impressed.
But like, it's like everyone is in one or chasing after one. So it just makes me feel crazy because I'm like, why is everyone chasing after
this thing
that I don't, it's different. It does have its good things, but I don't see what it would give me that I don't currently have.
Yeah, it would just be different. And it is just like one of those things that comes down to like cultural scripts and cultural programming. And you're told like, this is what life looks like. And from the minute you're born, you know, people are talking about, oh, when you get married, or like, oh, I'm going to save for my kid's wedding or whatever it is. All of that kind of thing creates a culture where there are assumptions. Here in America, the assumption is you'll go to college. The assumption is you'll get a job. The assumption is you'll buy a house. The assumption is you'll get married before you buy a house. The assumption is you'll have kids and you'll do that after you get married and have a house. Because of all that cultural space that's created around that, when you aren't in line with that, it ends up feeling like you're not normal or like you're broken. For people who are in line with it, it ends up feeling like sort of purposeless once they achieve it. They're not sure what's next because they've been told there's this trajectory and now it's like, well, what's the next thing that I'm supposed to do?
Right.
You know, I've run out of my track of my cultural
script.
Right, and
that's probably like kind of that empty nest syndrome a little bit. Because, you know, I think it's a sort of a relief probably to have children, like small children, because you literally can't think about yourself that much because you're just thinking about your kids. But then they're not kids forever. They're going to grow up. And then you're going to be back. You're going to be alone with your own mind again. and then what do you do?
Right. Which is the same thing I sort of do with work. You know, I've been so busy recently, like probably the last 4 months. And then things at work have transitioned for me a little bit and it's a little bit slower. And I'm working feverishly to fill it with other work, even though I've been complaining for months and months and months, much like a mom of young kids, about how busy I am. And then as soon as it slows down, there was like, I felt this like distinct panic of like, oh my gosh, what am I doing with my life? What am I going to do? But I had managed to like run away from that feeling through work. And as soon as work slowed down, I was like, oh, I'm really lost. And like, I feel like I'm not really sure what life is anymore or what I'm doing it for, or not in a depressing way, although it sounds depressing, but like, I can't remember why I'm alive. Mm-hmm. It was so wild to me that feeling has probably been there for a while, but I haven't noticed it because I'm busy. And it was crazy to me that my instinct was like, okay, well, I'll probably just work some more, you know, just outwork that feeling.
That's so common. That's why we have a workaholic.
Yeah.
I mean, people are workaholics. I couldn't tell you why I'm alive. I don't know. I was just reading this thing that was about the things that all, you know, they have in the world, there's like these blue zones where people live to be 100, or like the healthiest people in the world. And there's like 9 things that all the blue zones have in common. One of them is having a purpose. And I was like, oh, crap. Yeah, I don't know. it's certainly not. I'm not like, yes, time to go to my office job. I mean, Do we have to know what it is? I feel like just enjoying the moment is good.
I know, which is probably what it should be. But like, that's part of where a relationship fits in the compartments in my brain is like, oh, I guess that's the next thing. Like, I guess that's a thing I should do because like, what else am I doing? You know, I'm just working. Like, what else?
Right. But then like, I always think, well, work, if you're in what you're doing, what more is there? If you're in doing your work and you're invested in it and you're thinking about it and you're not daydreaming, like that's what more could there be? Like being invested in the moment is like,
yeah,
that's the only thing that exists. I don't know.
A goal. Right. Right.
Oh, what is life?
It's good.
What is life, Abs?
That's the
question that we're going to answer today. Man. No, just kidding. We can't answer that.
I do understand that feeling. It's like the simple things. And when I'm present, it's really good. But then it's just chaotic.
It is chaotic and confusing. And it probably is chaotic and confusing because you have, as we've talked about, all these little people living in your brain and they're all shouting for different things. So let's talk about this. The first time I heard about the idea of the committee in your brain, I was talking to my previous therapist who I'm in love with. And it was surprising because we think about maybe having conflict within ourselves, but it's between maybe like two halves. But this idea is like, there's actually like a whole family and they all want different things. And it's so, of course, it's really hard to make decisions or figure out what you want when there's all these different people in your brain. Shout out to my wonderful friend, Tripti. I hope she's listening right now because one of my favorite things she ever told me, because she was seeing the same therapist, is that one of the people on her committee is just rocking silently in the corner. Like they're just like if you imagine there's this like boardroom and everyone's around the table, she's like in the corner, just like rocking away, like slowly with like her thumb in her mouth. Yeah. Sometimes some of the committee members are like kicking the other committee members under the table and like others are like tied up and can't talk. And
well, and since we started talking about this, I got a little bit lost in the internet world of research because I was trying to think about how brains work and why that happens and how my brain works and what happens in my brain. But then I got like, I spiraled a little bit into like, wait, what actually does happen in your brain? And you know, it's hard to tell because like even the research they've done on this, it's really obviously not objective because it has to be observed and then regurgitated because I can't actually get inside someone else's brain. And so I don't really know what's happening. And even inside my own brain, the process of observing it sometimes changes the process of what is happening in it. You know, like that's sort of the point of meditation. So it's kind of hard to know what your brain does when you're not watching. Okay, so I want to rewind and ask you some questions because I'm trying to figure out what happens in your brain. Okay, so is there a narrator like in your brain speaking all the time? Are they speaking in words? Are they male or female? Are they you? Are they first person or third person? Is it constant? Talk about what happens in your brain just like on an everyday normal basis.
You know
what's
interesting is I feel like I talk to myself in the second person or I'll be like, Hannah, we gotta get out of bed. And then I'm like, we? What? Or I'll be like, gotta like do this thing or like we're gonna get through this. It's always like I'm talking to a you.
Yeah. Cause I think I'm such an external processor that when I'm talking out loud or writing, that's mostly when I'm thinking. And then when I'm not doing one of those two things, I think my brain is sort of like kind of floaty, like just sort of like floating around and not really paying attention to anything. Which is maybe why I like the work feeling, because I'm just working. That's all I'm doing. There's not like a thing going on. There's not like feelings I'm noticing. It's just work. When I start to pay attention, then I need like a pen and paper, or I need to be alone in my house so I can talk out loud. And then I notice that I have part of how I figure what I think about things is I sort of pretend I'm talking to people. So it's like a dialogue in my head between myself as a character and someone else who's real, but not them, like my imagined version of them. Oh. Like if I just had coffee with a friend and I'm driving home and it felt weird, like it's almost like I'm imagining talking to them about it. I'll be like, well, blah, 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 blah. Why did you do that? Blah, blah. And then I'll imagine them responding and then I'll imagine responding to that. It's really strange. Well. So then I was thinking about like, your committee thing. And I was like, when does that kick in for me? Because I'm familiar with this concept and we talked about it last time. I was like, yeah, 100%. And I use it all the time with clients because, you know, part of the work of therapy is figuring out what narratives people have sort of subconsciously that they're operating out of. Once you figure out those narratives, part of what's helpful is if you can put what I call like a name tag on them, the narrative or whatever that you have that's like, oh, you're stupid and you're lazy and you never do anything. Does that sound like anyone you've ever had in your life? And like 9 times out of 10, they're like, oh, that sounds just like my mom. I'm like, great, let's put a name tag on that person. Like, let's put a name tag on that voice so that when that narrative comes up, you know, it's not, this isn't what you think of yourself. And this isn't like a true thing. This is your mom. This is your mom's voice, you know? So we do that a lot. So I've been trying to think about how that works in my brain. And I think I have just like, maybe just like multiple selves that are just all me that are interacting with real people that look like real people and identify as real people and have the right name tags on.
Oh, wait. But, so are the people, so there's the, okay. So there's the bunch of fabs, and then there's
maybe only two fabs. Okay. There's two fabs, I think.
And then like there's other people in the committee room and they're other people in your life with name tags on.
Yes.
Oh, but what are they doing in the committee room? That is your committee room. They should not be in there. Or maybe they should. I don't know.
Well, I think that's the problem right there, Hannah Gals. I think we just hit it right on the head. But I think my theory is that that's a way I've protected myself from integrating them with me. Like, I know it's them and not me. You know what I mean? So they shouldn't be in the committee room. That's true. But at least I've identified that in the committee room, they're not me. They're them.
Okay.
So it's like,
I think you're even a step ahead of me then, because I think my committee is all a bunch of me's, but they're like other people disguised as me. Because,
right. Like today when you were driving home from that conversation, the things you're saying sound like the things she's saying.
Like I have a person who, like I try and give each person a name. I think that's, like you were saying, a label is helpful.
Love it.
So
tell me.
I think I have like a part of myself that's like the wild one. And the wild one's always like, what's up? Okay. Let's do some shit. But like is in the back and is like yelling. But like no one's paying attention to her.
Like heckling.
Yeah.
Heckling.
She's like, this is dumb. Let's go jump in the ocean. Let's go to fucking France. What are we doing? Time's a wasting.
Your money.
Yes. And then the one that I think is kind of calling all the shots is like the scared person who's trying to do the right thing. Trademark hashtag. Like whatever that is.
Okay.
And I think that's like very much an amalgamation of like probably mostly family, like family expectations are what I imagine family expectations are. And I'm like, I think that committee member like snuck in. I don't think they were born in the committee room like the wild one was. I think they just were kind of like, they were called in maybe by like special ops to like get everyone under control.
to control. Okay. Okay, this is really helpful. Okay, now that you've said that, I'm like, okay, I think I do have, three, I've for sure got like what I call baby girl fabs, which is just like young fabs, kind of feels incapable. She's like got a lot of like hope and like wants amazingly good things to happen for her and thinks that they will. And then I've got like, inside my brain, she's called logical fabs, but externally, I see that she's cynical fabs. But she's the one who's sort of like, hey, baby fabs, it's really important that we embrace that, you know, we are probably like everyone we love is going to die really soon. And we just need to get ready for that. And like, you know, you need to come down to earth and you're not facing terrible things about yourself. And I will help you do that.
Oh, OK.
And then everybody else in the committee room who's like, whoever in that time in my life is causing ruckus, like telling me things about myself that aren't true and their voices are too loud and have too much power. And so they've broken into this like part of me that they obviously shouldn't have access to. And then I have who I think is supposed to be the leader of the room. And this is where like my faith-based stuff kind of interjects, because this is what I call my true self fabs. That's like fabs with God spirit inside of her, who is able to like listen to all the people in the room, kind of hear all their concerns, let them feel validated. But really, at the end of the day, here at least the fabs is in the room and help them feel validated and understood. But is like, this is who we are and this is what we're going to do.
Oh.
That's the person I try to
listen to. Wow, that's great. I mean, that's like, so like your true self with like a capital S.
Yeah, true self fabs.
is in charge of the committee. Yes. That's wonderful.
Yes. Well, she should be. You know, sometimes things go rogue.
Well,
in there.
Well, let me ask you this. Are there any Fabses or people in there who are there, but they don't say anything?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I'm trying to think about it now. Again, because I'm such an external processor or distracted non-processor are my kind of my two extremes. I don't really notice it a lot. I notice it when people have busted into that room who shouldn't be in there. And then they're making me think I'm like worthless or their words are like getting stuck and playing on repeat. That's when I notice it the most. Uh-huh. But I don't think there's anyone in there who's like, I think the two Fabses that talk the most are definitely the one that's like, I'm weak. I'm a victim. I'm helpless. I can't do anything. And the one that's like, get your shit together, do something better. And like, they're both right and wrong. You know, they're both like, have things to say that are reasonable. They're not caricatures. They're just different parts of me that when I fall into one of them or the other, I'm not able to make healthy decisions, which is why the true self kind of helps navigate them. I don't think there's a part of me that's quiet. Do you have that?
I think it's possible they're there and I don't know who they are yet. Maybe they were there, but now they're gone. Because I think that like when I first did this exercise, like 4 or 5 years ago, I think it's different in there now. It's like, there's still a pretty similar lineup, but like, yeah, it's funny. I feel like the scared one is like, she's like kind of in charge, but she's very like aware of how tenuous the being in charge is. And it's kind of, she's like kind of when you have a TA
right.
And you're like, oh God, it's this TA's first year teaching and they're really nervous.
Oh my God. The wild ones like biding their time to overthrow, cause total anarchy in the boardroom.
And the TA's like, ha, 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 joke. And everyone's like, that's not funny.
So who do you want to be in control in your boardroom?
Well, I guess I just think it should be every self has a time to be the one in charge when their like skills or voice is most useful. Yeah. And it's not good when it's like very skewed in one direction, i.e. the scared one.
Right.
Because there's also like an adventurer, you know, and then also someone who's like, I want to connect with people. And then someone who's like, I want to make stuff.
Right.
And then maybe like an angry
what's
child.
Interesting to me, so I guess, of course, my only experience being inside a brain is my own. But like, because my child self is in general more scared than my grown up other Fabs, it's strange to me that your scared one is not your child self, right? Because when you were talking on a previous episode of Hanalyze This, I can't remember what it was called, but you talked about, it was so good.
Oh,
it was the hypnotherapy one. Yeah, you talked about your 9-year-old self and earbuds. You should go listen to that if you didn't, because it was like, oh my gosh, I was like crying and laughing when I was listening to it. Yeah, I loved it. But you were talking about your what I would call your baby Hannah Gelb self. She was like unafraid, right? She was like bold. She's a little bit more like the wild one.
Yeah, no, she has like no fear. I just feel like all of this, like what made the wild, young, like fearless child go down that path? Like, I don't know. I mean, just lots of things, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's some
I'm guessing
sort of,
Hebrew
I mean,
school
and, like,
had
so
something
much
to
this.
Do with it.
Right. I was just about to say, like I'm, you know, always on the culture train because that's what my master's is in, is cultural psychology. But it's like so many narratives that get kind of spoken into us by the meanings we make of things and these moments we have in our life that are like intense, emotionally intense. And our brain then locks in whatever the meaning is we make of that moment, what went wrong in that moment. We lock it in as a narrative. And I think some of these selves are just like fractured parts of you or parts of you that you've learned to be ashamed of or parts of you that you've learned to be proud of that aren't as integrated as they could be because of how people responded to them. And then part of these things are just those narratives, those meanings that like are trying to reconcile with one another because they seem inconsistent and your brain is trying to figure that out, which is why I always like try to help clients find those name tags. Cause it's like, if you can figure out what you think and what you want, and if you can figure out, realize like that the other voices in there sound like other people, and you get to decide whether you agree with that or not, whether you want to integrate that narrative or not, or whether that narrative just came up because of a specific moment that was born out of brokenness or born out of distortion or dysfunction on someone else's part, then you're able to kind of clear out the boardroom a little bit and just keep the characters in there who are part of who you want to be and who you are, you know?
But that is so hard. It takes so much courage. It's like, so I feel like
it's really hard. The religious stuff, like when you say Hebrew school, I mean, like, because of my background, I do a lot of work with like spiritual counseling. Mm-hmm. And man, oh man, those cultures really take a toll. Because don't get me wrong, earbuds, I also love those cultures in lots and lots of ways, and I'm part of them. But I have to say, like, because what you do so much of the time is you take these cultural scripts or these narratives, and instead of just saying, this is what I think, you say, this is what God thinks. And then what happens is inside someone's boardroom, they have like 15 different people running around wearing the name tag God. And he's saying some great, he or she is saying some effed up shit. It's inconsistent. It doesn't make any sense. And it's really hard to separate. But because someone told you, like, this isn't just what I think, this is what God thinks, then already that authority in your boardroom has so much more power. They have so much more weight. When really it's like, no, that's what that person thought. And they just kind of used his name to do it. And it's like unraveling that stuff is so painful and sad, because it's like hard to get people to separate those things out and find, if they do want to have a relationship with a spiritual being or with God, it's really hard to get to them to the place where they can say, like, it wasn't God who said that, and it wasn't God who did that, you know? It's so complicated.
Yeah. How does anyone even walk around with all this stuff?
I think mostly, Hannah, they would trust it an awful lot.
I think alcohol is also a factor.
Alcohol is a factor, but honestly, most people don't even need that. When I talk to my friends about, because I'm always interested in, like, how do people process? Like, what's happening when they have an incident at work or they have a conflict with a friend? Like exactly what you did when you first got on this episode, and you're working through, like, oh man, I felt bad in that situation. What happened? Let me unpack it. Let me figure out what went wrong. Let me think about how I can make different decisions next time, or not, and spiral into, like, sadness about it, you know? Either way, you're processing. Like, you're trying to make sense of what happened, and you're able to track down the root of it and what triggered it and the feelings involved. But, like, the more I talk to people, the more I'm like, people don't do that. They do not process. And, like, sometimes they don't process for years. And when you ask them, like, a feeling they had, they can't tell you the last feeling they had. And when you ask them, like, thoughts they have, they can't even, like, they wouldn't even know how to start this conversation. That's
how do
the
they
tricky
not
one.
Have a heart attack from, like, all of their thoughts and feelings queuing up?
I think what happens is, what I'll do is refer you to the Dan Harris episode of Analyze This, where he talks about having a panic attack on live television in front of 5 million viewers, and how part of why that happened is because he hadn't processed. You know, he became a reporter during 9/11 and then was in, like, war zones and had all this stress, but didn't even know how to identify it as that. And then, you know, probably had some feelings that he didn't identify, so, like, did some coke instead
right.
to cover that.
I was surprised.
Then,
I'm not,
you know, had
known that
a panic attack.
I was like, what?
I didn't know that either. Yeah. And he was like, the body will, like, quit on you at some point, which I do think is true. I think this is why people have nervous breakdowns, or they, like, you know, have midlife crisis. It's like, you know, yeah, 40 or 50 years of not processing anything is going to take a toll. But they don't have the skills to do that. Whoa. It's insane. I'm like, but what? So what happens in your head? And they're like,
yeah, what's in there? Like, what's in there?
I don't know. I can't figure it out. You know, even having a boardroom earbuds, if you have a boardroom and you're aware of it, you're in a great spot, because you're at least observing your brain, which helps it operate and function a little differently.
Right? I honestly feel every day requires a little processing, because every day, as Joni Mitchell says, something's lost and something's gained in living every day. I mean, you're on some kind of path. Is it the right path for you? Like, what happened at work? What did you eat? Like, all that. That's
right.
Like,
and who, so, okay, do you process that every day with people or by yourself?
Probably with people. Probably, I would like to get better about doing it on my own, like maybe journaling more. But I honestly just hate when my journaling, I'm always like, oh, I hate this shit. I hate reading this garbage.
oh my gosh. That's so funny.
But I honestly think actually, it would be best if I could journal every day, just even for like 5 minutes. But it usually ends up being like, the week is so busy for stupid modern reasons, and I'm always like, what's happening? And then the weekend, I try to, like, process a little bit. But if I didn't do it at least once a week, I would be like, that's when I have a nervous breakdown. That's, you know, and this is actually really right. interesting because I don't think I've ever put those together. I've always just thought I just need quiet time, but I didn't realize like, no, that's my processing time because I feel so physically when I'm full to the brim of stuff. And then it's like, there's no more room. I literally can't take one more step. I cannot go out. I cannot talk to a person. I have to be alone or I'll literally like collapse into tears.
Right. Interesting.
Which is what happened on my trip.
Oh, man.
When I was in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah. That's your five wing right there. You got to have the space. You need that, space. Yeah. No, I hear that for sure. Finding those people that make sense to process with Marco Polo, that app has been like amazing for me. Now my poor friends who I process with on Marco Polo, I really get that processing need fixed. No, wait, had it scratched. Yeah. Processing itch scratched.
That's great though. I think it's great. I think it doesn't, you know, like processing doesn't have to be anything huge and complicated. It could literally be, I'm talking out loud to myself while driving for literally 5 minutes. That could be all you need just to like, to expel or express what's going on in some form or another. It doesn't have to be like.
Yes. Okay. An interesting thing I learned when I was doing a little bit of my dive this morning is there's all these recent studies on what happens in your brain when you are thinking in a verbal format, when you're either dialoguing with self or dialoguing with other people inside your brain. And it's the same thing that happens when you're talking out loud to a friend or a person or yourself. And it quiets your brain because your brain hears itself talking, but also knows predictably what your brain is going to say. So it's like this, it's different like than if you had, like when you listen to an episode of your voice on Hanalyze This, it doesn't quiet your brain because you don't know what you're about to say. It's not
Whoa!
So, I know. So they were talking about schizophrenia and how this plays in where it's like what happens for some people is when those voices come into their head. They are, you know, having sort of normal human processing of like, hey, there are fractured parts of self that have taken on these different personalities or different characters in your brain, which everybody really has. But whatever the functionality is that helps you recognize it's coming from inside your brain isn't there. So your brain can't predict what it's about to say, which makes it feel like it's another person and makes it very disorienting and doesn't quiet your brain. It activates your brain the way your brain is activated when someone's talking to it. Isn't that crazy?
Wait. Okay. Explain to me again what happens when you're talking out loud to your friends and why that's different from listening to yourself talk like on a podcast.
Yes. Okay. So talking out loud to your friends or talking out loud in your head or talking not out loud in your head has the same effect on your brain, which is it quiets your brain because you're hearing yourself speak, but you know what you're about to say. So your brain has like this synchronization almost that helps it feel quieter. But when you listen to a recording, so like the studies, they played people recording back of their own voice. It doesn't have that effect in your brain because your brain isn't having that part of it activated that's thinking about what you're about to say before you say it. It's like listening to a thing. And even though it's your voice and even though it's a thing you've said, it can't quite remember what the next word is. So it's like out of sync. And that's the same thing that happens when someone else talks to you. Because your brain is activated trying to listen, trying to understand what they're saying. It doesn't have to do that when you're talking. When you're talking to yourself or you're talking inside your head, your brain doesn't have that part activated to listen because it knows what you're saying as you speak. Like it's in sync.
Oh, that's so interesting.
But for people who don't have that happen when they're thinking, it can feel like they're getting the information for the first time as they hear it. So that synchronization isn't in play. So their brain gets activated rather than quiet.
And is that common or it's only if you have a neurodivergent brain, as
we
say?
I don't know. I think it's really complicated. And like all the studies are like, we have no idea what we're doing because we can't see inside anybody's brain ever. And even them telling us what's happening in their brain is very unreliable.
Indeed.
So, you know, I think it's really hard to know. The theories around things like schizophrenia have been that like the divergence comes with how threatening that voice is. But now they're like, oh, that can't be true because some people speak to themselves in a very threatening way. And we don't categorize that as schizophrenia. So it's really complicated. And now this is kind of the emerging theory is that synchronization isn't happening. So the brain thinks that voice is coming from somewhere else rather than inside of it.
Oh,
but it's very complicated. Yeah. And if anyone's listening who's like actually studying this, then everyone please know that I'm like way oversimplifying this after very short amount of
well,
research.
Well, you have me fooled. You sound like an expert. That's so interesting. interesting because I was going to say, like, my mind, if it does get quiet in those moments, I'm not. It's either on a scale that's just so small that I cannot tell, or it just doesn't happen for me because I...
Sure. I'm not sure it feels like soothing.
Oh, okay.
It's just not activate. It's not like actively listening. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Wow.
But I don't think by quiet, they mean like restful.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Sometimes I'm like, if I have to listen to my brain say one more thing, I'm literally going to lobotomize myself.
And it's hard when that was why I kind of asked that control question. Cause like that's, I was trying to think through like, okay, with this episode, what's like helpful for earbuds and what's like the goal. But I think where I got stuck a little bit is like, what does it look like to feel in control of that process and like to feel like you're able to talk back to your brain rather than having it control you, where when it's saying things that you're like, you can identify as a narrative you don't want to be owned by, like you're worthless or you're stupid or you always do this, mm-hmm, or you know, you're never going to amount to anything. What does it look like to recognize that's happening and also be able to soothe and kind of take control, which I think is why the true self version of myself has helped me so much. It's like there's a person in the room who we're all clear is the mm-hmm. authority, and like they're not mean, they're not like repressive, they just validate and also soothe. And they're the ones that's like, I understand you're feeling that, I know where that comes from, you're more than that, like that's not true about you, mm-hmm. you know. So I don't know.
We don't know, guys. That's it. I was gonna say, because I know that I make, like, this is something I'm working on, but I will make anybody an authority over my life. Like, literally, I could be reading a blog. Like, remember I sent you that blog and you're like, disregard bullshit. I don't even know. It was all about like how, like, you know, people need to like plan their lives. They're just like, they don't even think about what do they want 5 years or where they want to live or what kind of partner they want and what the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's like an opinion article. It was based on nothing.
And then I was like having a nervous breakdown because I was like, this person is now God and I'm not doing anything that they're saying.
Yeah, man. They have too much power in that boardroom. And it's like, sit down, buddy. If you shouldn't even be in here, but you're lucky you get to be in here. And you can sit here and listen to what's true about me.
You're not shouldn't even be in here, but now that you're here, trying to know, fucking lucky. We have real good coffee. Donuts. I would have a lot of donuts totally. In my boardroom.
I mean, I do think you get to the point where it's like for me, I just went through a season in life where like every authority and kind of every external voice was sort of speaking in synchronized fashion some like really terrible shit over me. I realized like, oh, I was like literally curled in a fetal position on the floor and was like, I have to settle this once and for all. I either am who they say I am or I'm not. And like, we got to make a plan either way, because if I am who they say I am, then I need to like check myself into a facility and like get some serious help, because I'm a psychotic, manipulative, off the rails individual.
Oh my goodness.
I know. It was not a good season. But if they're wrong about me, like, then let's settle it. And like, I know they're going to speak up in the boardroom. I know those voices are there and they can have the power to make me feel bad. But like, we got to settle it once and for all that like, there is no ground to this argument and we're not going to listen to it anymore. And so like, yeah, those voices still come up in the boardroom for sure. But I do remember a certain turning point where it was like, we're settling once and for all. Like, the case has been heard. We've heard all their arguments. The jury is in and the judge has decreed that like, that's actually not true about this person. And so like, you can keep yelling it. You can still keep protesting on the streets, but like, we've reached a verdict. So now those voices, it feels like they have the power to make me feel bad.
Wow!
They don't have the power right to like, change who I am, you know?
That's amazing! That's so incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
But I don't think I would have done that if it wasn't like literally, I have to figure this out. Like, I'm at a crossroads in my life and like, I have to figure out if they're right or wrong about me. If they're right, I want to know it. You know, like I'm okay knowing that and like figuring that out. What's making me crazy is the back and forth. It's the not knowing. It's feeling like the things they're saying don't resonate with my own experiences and how the situation felt internally. And so like, there just has to be this moment where someone gets to decide what's true about me. And it probably shouldn't be someone who's never been inside my head.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to have to do a whole episode on just this experience, because first of all, that is like the most amazing, brave thing that a human can do. I think truly is to be like, I'm going to go in there that's a scary place.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, to me, it sounds so absurd that you could ever think that you're like this psychotic, manipulative person. I mean, I think most.
Oh, man. When everyone's telling
you. Most psychotic, manipulative people aren't worried that they're psychotic and manipulative.
Well, but they also, I know enough to know they don't generally know, right? So, you know, I was like, maybe I don't know. And that is true. It's possible. You know, I was like literally going to my therapist who for a time in the season, I wasn't allowed to see her. So that made this mm-hmm. hard. And I wasn't allowed to talk to the friends who knew me, which made this situation mm-hmm. hard. So when I finally got to see her again, I was like, hey, look, I know it would be a hard thing to tell a client, but like, you got to tell me if you think I am like a psychotic, manipulative, like psychopath. Like, I know that people are, and I know we'll deal with it. And I know there are ways to get help for that. I really do. And I want to know if it's true, but like, you got to tell me. And she was like, Babs. No. I was like, okay. But even that wasn't enough, right? Even her voice wasn't enough. It didn't have any more weight in the courtroom than anybody else's. Like, I had to get to the point where it was like, I have settled this for me, you know?
Wow. Yes. And then you don't have to ask anybody else anymore.
I don't. I really don't. And I can hear what they say, and it upsets me, obviously, but it doesn't send me into like the tailspin of panic it used to, mm-hmm, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's all just take 5 seconds of silence for Fabs. The bravest soul we know. Wow.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that is hard work.
It was. It was hard work. It was hard work. And I don't think I would have done it if I didn't have to, mm-hmm, you know? But there you go, guys. That's the life. Figure out what's true about you inside
and
your boardroom. Put that voice in charge.
I have a lot of cats in my boardroom. They don't talk, but they ease the tension. You know what? Actually, I didn't really realize that until today. I am making the decision right now to put cats in there because they're going to like ease the tension. They're going to diffuse the anxiety, whatever. And also if like someone's getting out of hand, they can, you know, and being too and bullying the other members can be like, hey, look at that cat. And they'll be like, Dada! Oh, it's a kitty.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like in your boardroom, all those people just need to like love and trust each other. If the scared one would love and trust the wild one, they could work together as a team, but they're just afraid of each
other.
Oh my
gosh, Fabs, you're such a good therapist. That is exactly what's going on. They're like, no, you're going, they're like, you don't understand. You're literally going to make us dead. Like, that's what the scared one is. Like, you,
right.
You're
all
gonna,
very threatened
like, we're
going to
die because you are not practical. You don't care about how to stay alive. Right. And then the wild ones, like, you are literally going to kill us by being so bored and sad and depressed that.
Right. We're not going to get anything out of life. You're going to ruin
our
whole
lives. No, we're going to spend our whole lives cramped and insane in this little bubble of safety that you value so much for some reason. And then you're going to be like 80 years old and be like, well, that was a waste. Anyway, it's time to die.
Right. Instead of like, hey, safe one, can you help us figure out a way to make this wild one's plan happen in a way that's safe? Like, let's work together. To make a wild, safe plan.
Yeah, and I think that's really hard for me because, you know, I'm very prone to black and white thinking. And so, like, integrating practicality with, like, your real... Because, you know, I think about, what if I just was a vagabond for, like, 30 years? That'd be great! And then I'm like, yeah, but then you're going to be, like, a 60-year-old woman with no career. And then the wild one's like, who gives a shit? Do you know what careers mean? Zero. Fucking zero. It's just something you do to make money for a while. No, like, oh my God, you are hurling through infinity. It doesn't matter what your career is. And also, you don't care.
Are we getting to witness your boardroom right
now? We're possibly in the boardroom. It may be like the door's open. Like, all of that is external. That is all that external people being like, but how could you be an old person and not have gotten anywhere in life? Like, what does that even mean? If I had 30 blissful, happy, full years, and then for someone to be like, oh, but you don't have money. Isn't that kind of sad and pathetic that you're like old and you don't have like a family? It's like, no, actually, I was living while you were spending every year padding your retirement and wishing you were dead. I was out experiencing life.
And then what happens? And then the boardroom explodes. Listen, you gotta find a self inside the boardroom that is integrated. You gotta put a new person in the room.
I think you're right.
Who's like, or neutral. Or like a neutral person who can like mediate. Yourselves need a mediator. They need a judge. They need a person who can like listen to all sides and then reach a conclusion that's valid for all.
Oh my gosh,
you know?
Fabs. Can I just put a Fabs in there?
No, it should not be Fabs. I mean, it can be a version of Hannah Gelb that is what Hannah Gelb would do for someone else, because you would be a Fabs to a Fabs. You would totally do that. If I had those different selves talking, you would ask me the same questions and help me mediate that conflict. And that's usually, like, even with me and with clients, it's like you would never talk to anybody else this way. Like, everybody has the capability to, like, listen to, well, a lot of people have the capability to listen to people's stories and feel compassion and validate and navigate things that are complicated. They very rarely, like, minimize it when it's someone they love and care about and they can see the struggle mm-hmm, they're going through. Mm-hmm. They just don't give themselves that same compassion, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like finding that part of yourself that you give to other people and giving it to yourself in that boardroom.
Okay, so here's what I think I'm going to do. I think I'm going to try maybe like once a week, just like journaling as if there's like a conversation happening. Because I think that would be really helpful. Because I'll also get really mad about, I get so angry and upset that everybody around me is like, I want a partner. And that's what I'm doing. And that is what life is about. And well, then I'm like, why do I not want that? What is wrong with me? And like, what is so great about it? Well, don't understand. You,
right. And there's a part of you that's like that safe self inside your brain talks like her. It talks like all the cultural scripts you've ever been fed. And like, there needs to be someone else in that room who's like, hey, what do you want? Maybe there's a part of you that does want a partner. And like, your wild one is resisting that because of the commitment or the fear of like, What if I didn't have that? And like, am I worthwhile? And there's a part of you that thinks maybe you're not. Or there's a part of you that just wants it. And like, instead of breaking all those things out, being willing to listen to everybody's arguments as if they're valid. Like when your scared one starts speaking, trust that like some part of that resonates with you, or she wouldn't be in the boardroom.
God, Fabs. Fabs, everybody. You are so amazing.
Oh my God,
everyone's
love it.
Arguments in your brain are valid. That is what you should take away from this episode, earbuds. Yeah. I hope our rambling was interesting and helpful in some way.
Yeah. And like the people who are in that boardroom who shouldn't be in there, hey, if you can't get them out of there, at least like tell them to sit down and drink the coffee and
shut up, or you know? Give them some like coffee with a little NyQuil in there so they fall asleep. You know what?
Right. Or give them a
It's your
book
boardroom. You make the goddamn rules. If you want a peacock.
You know what? Those people are usually kind of judgy and have opinions anyway. So just put them in the corner and have them like work on some other project that's unrelated to you. And while they're busy doing that, the rest of your boardroom can figure out what you
want
for you. Yes,
you distract them. Kind of like when a child needs to be distracted. Like give them a different.
Yes. Send them to
toy.
Facebook. There's tons of fuel on Facebook for their arguments.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That's the secret.
You know what I think it would be a good sign off for the podcast? I like the idea that every week is
a different
one. Oh my gosh.
I was just thinking that. I was thinking, yes, I think that is the most analyze this way to have a sign off.
It is the analyze this way. It is the analyze
this way. I'm going to take a crack at it. I'm going to say, Fabs, thank you so much, as always, for all your hard work on the podcast. We could not do it without you. We love you. And your insight.
Oh, and before I go, I'll say that the next like 3 episodes of Analyze This, I'm so excited about. I don't want to do any spoilers, but the next 3 are tune in.
Hey, we're a good show. That's the sign off for today. No, today's sign off is you trust yourself. You know more than you think. You've got a lot
trust
going
yourself.
On.
That's a good
trust
one.
Trust yourself. Trust yourself. Okay. Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening, guys, and please be sure to subscribe to our podcast and review it and like it and share it with your friends. And you can go and talk with me on the Twitters at Hanalyze Pod, and you can also be a patron and help keep our podcast going at Hanalyze. Nope, that's totally wrong. At patreon.com/Hanalyze This. Yes. Okay. Bye.